Welcome to The Neighbor Next Door, a podcast about the power and importance of neighboring. I'm your host, Matthew Johnson, and as usual, I am joined on the virtual front porch by my colleague in neighboring, Adam Barlow Thompson.
Hey, good neighbors. Welcome to the podcast. Glad you're here. We are continuing today in episode 5 of a 5-part episode series around an interview that Matt and I did with Cormac Russell, who is a leading voice in asset-based community development and the author of the book Rekindling Democracy, which came out in the summer of 2020. We talked to Cormac for about an hour, and then Matt and I got so much out of the conversation, we've turned it now into 5 episodes of our podcast. So... It was good stuff, as you can tell.
It was so good. It was so good. And I just want to, like, this was not a secret plan for us to just, like, stretch it out. It really was like, no, there's really this much that right. That we need to spend some time with and be able to sit with. So, yeah.
So, I mean, we've done recaps in the previous episodes, but there's too many of them now. So if you really want to listen to the previous episodes, just go listen to them. Go back, I think probably in total, you're going to need like an hour and a half, 2 hours maybe. And mm-hmm. You can just start going. And the good news is you don't have to listen to Matt and I that often because it's a lot of Cormac.
That's right. That's right. Which is pure gold. And, so what do you think, Adam? Is this a binge-worthy, like, series?
I think we created a binge series for the ages here. Yeah. It'll be one of those things you read about, you know?
Yeah.
Remember when the neighbor next door did that Cormac Russell series? Dang! Blew my mind.
At the point that we start meeting in person with people and like working together and there's actual water cooler moments again.
Oh yeah.
This will be one of those conversations.
This will be it. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to jump in, near the end of our conversation. I, asked, Cormac if he could say a little bit about joy, which is a topic he mentions in his book and, is a central theme for us, one of the ingredients of neighboring. So we're going to jump in with his thoughts on joy.
Well, yeah, I suppose the difficulty is that so many of our metaphors are almost, we can nearly finish each other's metaphors now. So for example, I say, well, it's not the destination, you say, it's the journey. Well, it's not, it's the dance. so in the dance, you get to say, let's just dance. You know, so this kind of sense of we prosper, we prevail. And actually, we grow very significant anti-fragility by being in a situation where we begin to realize that, first of all, we are enough, that there's a sufficiency that's much closer to hand than we think. Like, we look at most of what makes people feel desperately unhappy and overwhelmed. It's that sense of I'm not enough, that I don't have sufficiency, and that I'm not going to make it, you know? So you think about it, and it's very real, by the way. I mean, it's easy for me to say, sitting here, but it's a very, very real feeling. And it's a feeling that's grounded in, for some folks, some horrendous trauma, both personal and cultural and, you know, multi-generational. So again, exemplified in so many ways by the tragic experience of George Floyd. I can't breathe, right? So it's a very real bringing home the fact that people are dying as a result of institutional racism. COVID, many people who did die and millions of people have died now, you know, and they're not just statistics. They are our brothers, our sisters, our mothers, our neighbors died saying or not being able to say, I can't breathe. You know, you look at the economic stresses that people are under currently and will face worse stressors to come. And what are they saying? I can't breathe. So it's glib at first hearing to say, have fun, you know, find joy, join with the neighbor. And what we're saying is so much more nuanced than that. And so much more in solidarity with you than just that. But what we're saying is that if we stay in the story that says, I am a victim, I am powerless, I have no agency, there is nothing I can do to make change happen, then, well, we're sunk, quite frankly. If we're in a story that says we're not going to change until the man changes, you know, the story that says I'll get my act together when the big guy gets his act together. Well, we've seen how that's played out, you know, it's not working out so well. So the myth of the big guy, you know, well, it's too male, too pale and too stale to be of any good to anybody who can't breathe. So if you want to breathe free, the starting point is to remember that the people who are most likely to enable that to happen are you and your neighbors. And that's an uncommon story. It's not a story that's the stuff of Hollywood. It's not the hero story, but the hero just has to be sent home. Because the difficulty with the hero story is the hero story is the royal opening to the narcissist and the, you know, the abusive male. And so much of this myth and this cult comes with a shadow side, you know? So I think this idea of saying it may not get you to the promised land or the American dream or any of that other stuff that we've been enculturated to kind of measure ourselves against, but in all kinds of ways, what it does is it gives us a platform within which we can begin to say, well, as has happened in so many cases, if we can begin to discover our own and each other's capacities, and we can begin to discover within each other that actually the truth of the matter is that we are enough, that we have what we need if we use what we have. The problem isn't insufficiency, it's a lack of connection and a lack of power around our connection. And that doesn't mean we have to settle, but if we can start by building our sufficiency and building our power, then we can actually bring about a better social order. But that's foundational. If we don't do that, then everything else that's built on top of whatever it is that we have at the moment will fall through the quicksand. So, you know, the carrying capacity of a preferred future is on us. And that revolution won't be funded. The state will not come in and say, yeah, great idea. Yeah, you know, I'm going to give you the tools to, you know, rip down the status quo like that. You know, it's not going to happen. And that's the truth.
What is the tangible action that our listener could take this week as they listen to this? What is the very tangible action that they, if they could do one thing to rekindle democracy in their life, what would that be?
So rekindling as a term, and I'd answer it with the metaphor and then a practical action, is if you think about being at a campfire and you go out and what you do is you look for kindling so you can start a fire to enlighten and enliven your life and the people who gather you around the campfire as you tell stories. That's the metaphor. And so in a kind of a sense of it's an invitation to a jamboree, you know, but use what you have to secure what it is that you agree you want. So in a simple way, I mean, mindful of public health guidelines, I would say finding a way of really hearing each other into expression and really beginning to entertain this idea that we are people with gifts, we are people with capacities, by just simply maybe connecting for the next week or two with three of your neighbors. So don't overdo it. I often say to people, get to know your neighbors before you need them. All right. So just three of your neighbors and be curious. Don't do it for sympathy. So don't go and find three neighbors who need to be fed or need, you know, to get pharmacy drugs collected or anything like that. I mean, do that if you need to, be good people and all of that. But for this particular exercise, don't make it one-sided. Don't make it where you're the helper and they're the helped. But actually be neighborly. And being neighborly is about empathy, not sympathy. It's two-way, right? It's where you can't tell the difference between the helper and the helped. And just be really curious, be nosy about them, and see if you can find out three things that they know well enough that they could teach you for free. And then allow them return the compliment. And who knows, you may hear yourself say something, or you may contribute something you never knew you had within you that could change your neighborhood and your life. And maybe that's enough.
All right, friends. Well, there you have it. The completion of our interview with Cormac Russell. I hope that this was as rich and beneficial for you as it was for me.
I hope that you take some of those actionable steps here at the end and you start doing them. Because as we've said over and over again, our ultimate goal of this podcast is that people would listen to it and then they would actually go and begin the practice of neighboring wherever they live.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Let's go. Let's go do it. Let's do neighboring. Let's build those relationships and make this happen. Yeah.
I am going to wait though, because it's like 10 degrees today. So I'm not going to do it today.
Yeah, that's fair. I think your neighbors might be like, wow, what's wrong with Adam?
But if it's not 10 degrees where you live, go and start neighboring right now.
Yes. Oh, good. All right. Well, The Neighbor Next Door is a production of The Neighboring Movement. You can learn more about our work by visiting our website, www.neighboringmovement.org. There you'll find neighboring tips and our blog and other resources that we have created. And you can learn about our staff and all the cool people that are a part of what's going on here. Our podcast team includes Adam and I, as well as Christopher Swanson and Jenna Moody. And Jenna is the one who does all of the editing work, which is, gosh, I'm just so grateful for Jenna. I'm pulling this together. Yeah. And finally, the music that you hear in the background is by Brutal Bear. So again, thank you for listening. And until next time, happy neighboring.
Happy neighboring. Thank you.